Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm still Marty.
Still Marty. I'm still Laura. But, you know, it's important that people be able to pick us out of a lineup, right? So,
well, exactly. And they've picked our voices out in ladies' rooms, so
yes.
Why not?
Yes. So let's put the face with the voice. All right. So just a really fabulous conversation. We had a listener request. We love to do these. And it's hysterical because it's actually one of the things that we talk about in, like, this is what we're going to talk about in this podcast, and we haven't done it yet.
Well, so, we probably should then.
Yeah, I think we should. My kitty has a runny nose. Why does my kitty have a runny nose? So we're going to get into that. Meanwhile, you guys, please remember, like the show, subscribe to the show, follow the show, join us. We're really happy to have you here. So, Marty?
Indeed.
About that runny nose on my kitty.
Oh, yeah. And this is really common, like really common. If we see a kitten that comes through our door and it doesn't have sneezing, runny eyes, runny nose, it's like, wow, this is great. Oh, okay. So it's really common, especially in kittens, but it's also common in adult cats as well. So this is where it becomes a little complicated because there are some really simple things that you can do about it, but for some reason, it doesn't always happen. So usually runny noses in kittens or adult cats are caused by a viral infection. It can be Khaleesi virus. It can be a herpes virus. It can be chlamydia. There's a number of different organisms that cause upper respiratory infections in cats and kittens. And one of them, like herpes virus, once they get that, it never goes away. It's like any other herpes, like the cold sore herpes other herpes. Mm-hmm. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. So cats will have it go basically dormant in their body, and then when they're stressed, it'll flare up again. Mm-hmm. So really, really common. Oh, and by the way, cats also can get Bordetella, which a lot of people don't know about. There is a Bordetella vaccine for cats and kittens, but most people don't vaccinate their cats for that because it's not really common. But rhinochalisi, so when you hear your veterinarian say or your vet tech say, we're going to vaccinate for FVRCP, there's a reason they say FVRCP, because it stands for feline viral rhinotracheitis, calisi virus, and panleukopenia, FVRCP. So those are kind of like a long string of long, long words with multiple syllables. Mm-hmm. So therefore, FVRCP is a lot easier to swallow.
Well, in dogs, we say DHLP, right? Or DHLPP, or it's a similar concept. It's a series of shots that cats should have, right?
Right. And so it's typically a series of two when they're kittens, maybe three, depending on the age you start, depending on if they're sick. And it's important that you keep those up. A lot of people bring their cat to the veterinarian when they're babies. So they're 2, 3, 4 months old, and they get their series of vaccinations, and then they spay or neuter them. And then the cats disappear off the veterinary landscape for the next 18 years because the cat seems fine. It's eating, it's drinking, it's using a litter box. Everything seems okay. Why do I need to go in and get anything? And so that's where we get into a lot of trouble, is these cats will fall off the radar. You come in pretty regularly with your dog because you need the heartworm test and the heartworm preventive and the flea and tick meds and the annual vaccinations and the annual visits and then the every 3 year vaccines. We kind of do those pretty regularly with our dogs, but cats just fall off the radar. And what happens not infrequently is people who have a cat are cat lovers inherently. And so a little kitten or a mama cat will show up at the back door. And you'll start to put out a bowl of milk, and then you put out a bowl of food, and then you put out a couple bowls of food because now mom has kittens. And now you have this whole parade of cats coming to your back door. And then one day it gets cold, and you move one or several into your house. And a couple things happen with this. One is you haven't had those cats vaccinated that you're moving in, or leukemia and FIV tested. And your adult cat is now 6 years old or 18 years old or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. And you haven't been to the veterinarian in the last 18 years with the cat. So the boosters aren't up to date. And now the little kitten comes in with runny eyes, runny nose, bleh, icky, snotty, icky little, icky little kittens. And now you've just exposed your beloved 18-year-old geriatric, immunosuppressed, in renal failure cat to this kitten. And now we have this blow up. And people just don't think about it. Even the screen on your windows or your screen on your door, your cat will be on the inside and the cat will be on the outside and it's summer. And so you have the screen open. You don't have the storm door down. And so they're exposed even through the door or through the window. And so all these things happen. And then people come in with the kitten and they say, well, you know, I've been feeding the mother cat for the last 6 months, but this isn't really my cat. You go, well, you know, newsflash, because you've been feeding her. She had a litter of kittens because you fed her. She got healthy enough to get pregnant, deliver the kittens, bring them back to your door because that's where the food was. And newsflash, they're your cats now.
You now, broke it. You buy it. Is that how that goes? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Now you don't have one cat.
Buy it.
Now you have seven cats. So it becomes complicated really fast. Don't laugh. This is how
I am not laughing. I hear the stories from...
crazy cat lady is a real thing.
I am that person with dogs, not with cats. So I can understand it just in a little slightly different way.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having seven cats. I mean, I've had more than that at one time. But it becomes more complicated when you have upper respiratory and stress. And then the old cat flares up or the young cat brings it in and and I've seen some cats get really sick with this upper respiratory. So you want to be careful, cautious, thoughtful about what you're exposing your old cats to. And, of course, you want to make sure before you bring that kitten or cat into the house that you've leukemia and FIV tested so that you don't put your beloved long-term cat relationship at risk for the unknown kitten, which is probably going to work out. But if it doesn't, then you're going to feel really guilty that you've exposed your cat.
Right. We've talked about this a little bit, but I think it's really important that we talk about when you're either bringing in a stray, whether you're adopting from the shelter, whatever you're doing with cats specifically, they must have those just basic level health tests before you bring it in the house. Am I right?
Yeah, they really should. The risk of bringing in a cat that's infected with feline leukemia, FELV, or FIV, feline immunosuppressive virus, are great. And unfortunately, they're viruses. We don't have a cure for them. And if you bring those into your household, then you've exposed your other cat or cats to it. And now you have a chronic viral disease that can shorten your beloved cat's life. And that's really not in anybody's best interests. So if you do find a cat, kitten, whatever it happens to be on the side of the road or out the field or at your back door or at the shelter or the rescue or the farm down the road, which has the sign for free kittens or
Walmart parking lot. Right. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. The sale barn parking lot, you know, wherever it happens to be, trot into the veterinary clinic before you ever put that cat in a situation where you're exposing your other cats. So either keep it isolated in your bathroom or garage or whatever your arrangements are. I mean, certain times of the year, the garage is fine. Certain times of the year, it's not. So be thoughtful about it. But before you expose your other cat or cats to this kitten, you need to trot into the veterinary clinic, have a blood sample drawn. It takes about 20 minutes to run the test. It's under $100. And you're going to feel really bad, really guilty if you expose your pre-existing household of cats to this adore. I don't care how cute the kitten is.
Right.
It's still like Typhoid Mary. It's still exposing your other cats to something dangerous.
And again, forgive me for lack of encyclopedic cat knowledge. I'm not as good there. Feline leukemia is basically a death sentence, right? Like it's, I mean, us through that.
Sure. It's a good solid, it depends. Mm-hmm. So if we see a positive kitten, about one of three things can happen. Either it can stay chronically infected, and by the time they're 2 or 3 years old, they can die from their disease. It can clear the virus and later on still have illness, or it can be chronically infected and somehow manage to survive for an extended period of time. On average, most of these cats live to be about 2 or 3 years old. And then something, because it's suppressing their immune system, something else comes along and kind of takes out the cat. So if you have a cat that's not recovering from surgery well, or isn't feeling good, or has this chronic sneezing, or anything that doesn't seem right, you should probably talk to your veterinarian about testing. Now, there are some people in the school of thought that say, treat the cat first for the illness that they have, and if they don't get better, then leukemia and FIV test, because we don't want to subject a cat to a test and then euthanize it immediately simply because it's positive, because some of those cats will still get better, unless it's bringing disease into your house, and that's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting. So we have feline leukemia virus, which is a disease typically of friendly cats. They get this virus from mother to kitten. They get it if they're sharing water dishes, sharing food dishes, mutually grooming. It's a disease cat to cat of friendly cats. Mm-hmm. Then we have FIV, which is feline immunosuppressive disease, which is similar to AIDS in people in that it is this really chronic, long-standing disease that also suppresses the immune system. But this is a disease typically spread by unfriendly cats. So biting, scratching, those kinds of behaviors, either in your household or outside your household. Now, okay. I had a cat that lived in our barn. Her name was Betsy, and she was FIV positive, and she lived to be quite old. So because we don't know really how old she was when she came to live with us, we don't know how old she was, but she was with us over 10 years with a positive FIV status. And we kept her isolated from other cats because that's a responsible thing to do. But nevertheless, she had this pretty nasty viral disease that eventually took her out. Now, some cats with FIV, the only symptom that you'll see will be significant stomatitis, which is an inflammation along the gum line. So if we see cats that come in and they're young and they have these really angry inflamed gums, that's going to raise our index of suspicion for FIV. If we see cats that are chronically ill, don't recover from surgery, just aren't feeling well, aren't thriving, aren't doing well, then we're going to suspect FELV, feline leukemia virus. But the kits that we test for one test for both. So you take a small blood sample, you put the drop on the little membrane, you come back 20 minutes later, and you either have a blue dot or you don't, and that'll tell you FIV, FELV, or the death sentence. The worst thing you can do is have both, because they both suppress the immune system. And it's not unheard of to have that happen. We've had feline FIV negative kittens born from a positive mother. So just because mom has the disease doesn't mean the kittens are going to have it automatically. But you can have all these weird combinations. If you have five kittens in a litter, you need to test all five, because you can have some with both, some with neither, and some with one. So
and
you really don't know.
You vaccinate for this, or there's nothing you can do to prevent this?
You can vaccinate for leukemia, and the feline practitioners are recommending that all kittens up until they're about 3 years old are vaccinated for leukemia. So yes, even if you don't think that your cat is going to go outside, even if your cat doesn't have exposure to other cats, the recommendation is all kittens should be vaccinated for FELV, feline leukemia virus. On the other hand, FIV, we had a vaccine for a number of years on the market, but it's been taken off the market. The biggest problem with the FIV vaccine was if you vaccinated the cat, you couldn't tell a vaccinated cat from an exposed cat. Leukemia, we can. On the leukemia test, it only detects leukemia if the cat actually has the disease. It doesn't tell us that the cats had a vaccination. So those two viruses are similar, but not identical, and they kind of run in parallel. FELV has been around for a long, long time. FIV, the newer one, I remember when that was first coming to the forefront and diagnosed back in the 80s. So this is a relatively new viral disease to cats. Kind of interesting. It was discovered out in California and then around the world and other places. Nels Peterson discovered it. It's pretty interesting history. But we haven't always had FIV. We've always had leukemia.
Interesting.
So test your cats. Basically, bottom line is test your cats. Don't expose your beloved house cats to something unknown until it's tested and found to be negative. And sometimes it takes more than one test. So that's the other controversy is, should you test the minute that a kitten walks in your door? Should you wait until they're a little bit older? There's some controversy, but at least talk to your veterinarian about it and take their recommendations seriously. If they say you should blood test your kitten before you bring it into the household, do this with your head. Say, yes, yes, I will. Here's my credit card, an extra $100. Isn't that big a deal when you think about how much protection you're providing with your beloved established colony of cats in your house? Because the last thing you want to do is have a kitten come in and just decimate your situation.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
And so is the leukemia vaccination then something that you don't repeat annually or every 3 years like we do for vaccines in dogs?
Yeah, we typically vaccinate annually until they're 2 or 3 years old, and that can change. So I would suggest that you look at what your current recommendations are with your veterinarian. But once they reach a certain age, sort of that young adulthood, we typically don't continue to booster. The FVRCP, we typically vaccinate for as a kitten 2 or 3 times, then a year later. And then most cats will go on a 3-year series if they are coming into the veterinary clinic on a regular basis. Right. And like I said, even an open window with a screen is an exposure. My first year that I lived in Milwaukee, my cat got into this nasty cat fight through the screen window at 2 o'clock in the morning. So, I mean, stuff happens through screens that cats are not dogs. Cats are not small dogs. So you have to keep in mind that this is a whole, like, dogs would not do those things.
No.
Cats would. So you can't treat cats and dogs as if they are the same.
Well, you guys have all heard my theory that cats are just fluffy potted plants. So I am not the picker on this. I'm a really good questioner when it comes to cats because I have no idea.
Right. So then we have vaccines and we need to talk about those. Mm-hmm. Cats should be vaccinated for rabies. Yes. Even if your cat doesn't step foot outside, you should still vaccinate your cat for rabies because stuff still happens in your house. My sister lived in the 3rd-story apartment of a house in downtown Minneapolis, and her cats had a bat in her apartment. And we're finding it to be quite enjoyable to play with. So that was an exposure to her cats. You have to have your cats vaccinated for rabies. Again, that can be either a 1-year or 3-year, depending on the product that the veterinarian uses. There is a 3-year product, but there's also a 1-year product, which is non-adjuvanted. And for some people that are concerned, that would be a good choice. Now, cats develop tumors at injection sites from vaccines and other long-acting injections that dogs would never dream of getting. So you want to talk to your veterinarian about what kind of rabies vaccine they're giving, how often they're giving it, where they're giving it. The recommendation for any injection in a cat is not over the shoulder or between the shoulder blades like we do in dogs, but as low in the leg as possible. So if there is a tumor that develops at the injection site, it's more surgically approachable. So that's one thing. The other thing is we, in our practice, and I've done this for 44 years, do the intranasal vaccine for cats for FVRCP. Most veterinarians don't do that. They do the injectable, and if they're giving it between the shoulder blades or over the shoulder, you're putting your cat at risk of a 1 in 10,000 chance of them developing a tumor at the injection site. So I have given the intranasal vaccine forever, and a lot of veterinarians don't do it, don't want to do it, don't know about it, just for whatever reason. But, you know, Bordetella vaccines are given to dogs as nose drops.
Intranasally all the time.
Yeah, in the most effective way. There is an oral vaccine, but it doesn't work as well as the intranasal, and the injectable doesn't work as well as that. So I give the intranasal, and a lot of people are like, oh, you couldn't possibly do that with a cat. Well, trust me, I've done this for 44 years, and maybe one cat every year or two I can't get the intranasal vaccine into. Cats are remarkably easier to give it to than dogs. And that's kind of counterintuitive because cats don't like fluid, water, any of that stuff. Cats are like, they're cool with it. They're like, oh, 2 drops in my nostril? Sure, I'm good. Instead of having to do a needle, which is always a concern because of the possibility of the injection site sarcoma that can develop in these cats from the vaccines or from other injections. So just be aware of it. Talk to your veterinarian. If your veterinarian looks at you with this blank look, maybe don't vaccinate that day. Let him do a little bit of reading about it or let him order some new vaccine in. Because the non-adjuvanted vaccines, like the PureVax, which is the rabies that doesn't have the preservatives in it, only gives you 1 year of immunity, but it's a much safer vaccine. So you have choices, and these are
and
things
those
that
are specific
should
to cats. These are not
yes
the dogs. Okay.
Correct.
So
correct.
Explain
so
to me, now I'm dying with curiosity, why would an injection of any kind, vaccine or not, give a cat a tumor? I don't understand what's causing that.
We don't really know. Good answer.
Cats are weird.
Yeah, nobody's really. Yeah, cats are not small dogs. So we haven't really figured out what the trigger is that initiates the development of a tumor, other than to tell you I've seen it. I've seen it in a couple of cats, not a lot, but it's one of the nastiest tumors that you'll ever want to look at. So the recommendation to inject low in the leg allows us to approach it more effectively surgically if the cat does develop that tumor at the injection site. Dogs don't do that. Dogs are cool. They're okay. Dogs yeah, just vaccinate cool. me. I'm good. But cats are like, no, I don't want a vaccination, and I'm just going to grow something icky because you vaccinated me and I didn't want it done.
So this sounds to me like part of the reason why people bring their kitten to the vet and you never see the cat again, because people don't. Do we have to address some kind of fear barrier there about taking your cat to be taken care of because you don't want a horrible thing to happen to it?
Mostly the fear barrier is the cat gets, A, you can't get it into the carrier. B, the next time you try to put it in the carrier, it hides under the bed. C, you get it into the carrier and it screams the whole way to the vet. D, it throws up in the carrier. E, it defecates and urinates in the carrier. And F, you get to the vet clinic and it won't come out and then you can't get it back in. So there's a lot of complicated
barriers.
Taking your cat to the vet. And there's some great videos online. The Americans, well, it's not AAFP anymore. There's another name for the feline practitioners, but they have videos on their website about how to put your cat in the carrier and get them used to the carrier, put the carrier in the living room, feed them in the carrier, all this stuff to get them used to it. But the reality is cats really hate the vet. And when they get there, some of them can be a challenge. So there are some things that we can do like gabapentin that can really improve. I love having cats come in when they're on gabapentin because they come in and you take them out of the carrier and they lay on the table like they're a throw rug instead of the cat that's bouncing off the walls and, you know, dangling by the door frame with their toenails. And these are real things that have happened. I mean, you can't even imagine how, like if cats came in the size of Rottweilers, I wouldn't be in practice anymore. I'd be dead. So thank goodness cats come in 10-pound packages. But yes, there's a lot to be said for getting your cat used to the vet, getting a vet that is feline friendly. There's a whole feline friendly thing. They should be coming out of the carrier or staying in the carrier being handled very carefully. You can give them chicken baby food or Ready Whip, the spray cream that comes out of a can that you put on top of your ice cream. I mean, there's some really great things you can do with cats to make the visits better. But most of the time, it's not about the injection site that causes people to freak out. It's the, I don't want
just the trauma of taking the cat to the vet.
Okay. Yeah, because it's
fair.
It's traumatic
totally
for
fair.
Everybody. Yeah, the cat doesn't like it. The humans don't like it. And there are some great feline veterinarians out there. They don't have to be at a feline-only practice. You can have people who really appreciate and do a great job with cats. But there's a certain energy that you have to have in the room with cats that's different than with dogs. Just saying, cat people are cat people, and dog people are dog people. And some people are both, but not everyone. Not everyone.
The groom shop that I worked at, I've mentioned before, and it was a busy, busy, busy groom shop attached to a super busy boarding facility. And we had a beautiful cattery and 300 dog runs. I mean, it was a great, great facility and a great place to work. And there were four full-time groomers, myself included. And miraculously, every time there was a cat, every single one of them was allergic to cats. And so yours truly got to do, and pardon me for the indelicacy, but it's called shaving the cat's ass because, you know, doing a potty trail cleanup on a long-haired cat in grooming language, that's what that is. And so that was my job. And they all thought it was fantastic that I was not actually technically allergic to cats.
Yes. Yes. So the hygiene clips are pretty useful. And yes, you can buy a $20 clipper on Amazon and do this at home yourself and not subject your cat or your groomer to those experiences. Yeah, Amazon sells this little rechargeable clipper on a USB. And I'll tell you, it's $16 to $20. It's a quiet little clipper. And yes, you can do your own hygiene clips. You can do their feet.
Yes.
You can do little armpit things. Yes. There's a lot of things that you can do with this clipper.
Anything you do with a cat to do with the clipper, you just make sure that you're really careful about their skin because it's very thin. And so that was what I learned from working with.
Otherwise, you'll be sewing up the cat.
Yes.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that the skin is really flat. You don't get a little crease in
the skin.
No wrinkles. No, but if you get those little $20, 40 blade clippers, they are the bomb.
Handy
and the
items.
Cats will generally, they'll let you do a lot of things.
Well, most of the, I mean, the ones that came to the groomer all the time were actually pretty good. You know, they were used to being brushed and they were big Himalayans and Persians and heavy coated
Maine Coons
critters
and all this stuff.
Yeah. Lots of fluffy cats. Okay. So back to our opening note. If your cat has a runny nose, it needs to see the doctor.
Yes. And frequently, but not always, they need an antibiotic and sometimes eye medication. So oftentimes the runny eyes and runny nose and the sneezing go together. Now, coughing is a whole different thing. Most cats don't cough with their respiratory disease the way dogs do. So it's important that you distinguish what your cat's doing. And if you're noticing some coughing, then grab your cell phone, grab some video, take it to your vet when you go in so that they can see it. And interestingly, cats don't usually cough with their respiratory disease. They can if they have mycoplasma, but most of the time a cough can be something like asthma. And dogs almost never get asthma, and cats sometimes get asthma. And it's truly asthma, like it's in their airways, their bronchioles get narrow, they have really bad respiratory congestion. And cats are interesting creatures. They don't tell you that they're sick until they're sick, like dying sick.
Right.
So by the time your cat is coughing and having a hard time breathing, your cat's in big trouble. So if that's the case, you need to make an appointment, get in as soon as possible, expect x-rays. You know, there can be fluid in the chest, there can be asthma, there can be a number of different things. The garden variety, upper respiratory, runny eyes, runny nose, kitten, squinty, that kind of stuff, usually not terribly serious, but some of these other can be. But you do need veterinary care. You probably need antibiotics. There is a really cool injectable antibiotic that lasts for 14 days. So if you have one of the cats that hides
only
under the
works
bed
on cats?
No, it works on dogs too. It's called Convenia. Works really well on dogs and cats. The problem with dogs is if you have the 97-pound dog with a skin problem, it's very expensive. But if you can't get medication into the pet any other way, then it's absolutely worth it. It's just most of the time we use it on cats because dogs take pills in peanut butter and cheese and liver sausage. And cats are like, no. If you've ever seen those cartoons about giving the cat a pill and how you end up in the emergency room, that's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
Real.
It's very real.
It's not funny. Yeah. So if your cat is having some respiratory issues and your vet says, well, I can either send this bottle of antibiotics and you can drag the cat up from under the bed twice a day, or I can give an injection and you don't have to do anything else with the cat, it's probably $20 more than the orals. Again, do this with your head and say, yes, please. Please give the injection, but give it low in the leg, down around the ankle, so that it's less likely to cause an injection site reaction. Because even the other drugs besides vaccines can potentially cause that tumor to develop. So it's one in 10,000 cats. It's not common, but it's common enough that it has to be in the conversation that you have with your veterinarian. And if they're doing some of these things that you're hearing me talk about and you're not comfortable with, then seek a veterinarian that's going to be more feline oriented. Doesn't have to be a cat only practice, but a more feline oriented practice.
Right. Okay. All right. So runny nose, run to the vet.
Runny eyes, runny nose, because you cannot teach a kitten to blow their nose into a Kleenex. So you're stuck with, you're going to have to. I've tried, like, I've often held Kleenexes for them, and they just don't seem to get it.
They don't
They're
get
like,
the
no,
blow part?
No, the blow part. No, but they can sneeze pretty well. So if you do have a Kleenex, catch the sneeze, because it's a lot tidier than having it on you.
Cat snot. Fantastic. It's a great
day.
It's a great day here at the Marty and Laura show. We have cat snot. That's fantastic.
Well, you brought it up. I'm just following.
I don't know. The listener brought it up, man. I'm just.
Okay.
Right, I'm just conveying the topic and asking the questions with my eyes bugged out. That's all. All right, Marty. Thank you so much, everybody. Like I said, if you wanted to have a good time learning about cat snot, this is where you should do it.
We're your girls.
We're your girls. We got you covered. We got your back, man. Subscribe to the show. We'll catch you next week with something more entertaining and less disgusting than cat snot.
Okay, we'll try.
Okay. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show.
We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.